Welcome to Whiskey Wednesdays, where we drink the finest whiskeys and argue the internet's most important topics.
Because if there's anything that the internet doesn't love more, it's arguing and telling people that they're wrong.
And with each topic, we have taken a side, and even if we don't agree with that side, we're gonna die on this hill.
So let us know why we're wrong down in the comments below.
Let's drink, dude. I got this. What is this?
All right, so today, Blade and Bow. I feel like this one's maybe the most obvious. Yeah. I generally try to pick a whiskey that's going to relate to what we're talking about.
Makes sense.
Today, what are we talking about?
Blades.
Blades. Talking about blades. So I had Blade and Bow. Now, sad to tell you that the Blade and Bow has nothing to do with blades and bow and arrows.
What do you mean?
What it has to do with is a skeleton key has two parts to it, a blade and a bow. So the Blade and Bow name is actually after
it's about keys?
The parts of the skeleton key. And that actually has, there's a reason why this little key is on here. There's some significance to it.
Okay.
So one of the things I love about bourbons, and you guys have told me that you have really enjoyed hearing the story behind some of these. So I try to pick bourbons, whiskeys that have some story to it. Blade and Bow does have a pretty cool story to it. So Blade and Bow was established in 1935 by Stetzel and Weller. Now, if you're a bourbon person, those names mean a lot to you. There's a lot of other bourbons that have come from Stetzel and Weller, from those names. I'm not gonna get too deep in those. Now, Stetzel and Weller closed in 1992, but then was bought again in 2014 by Bulleit.
Oh, okay.
So on the original Stetzel and Weller building, there were five keys that were hung on the front door of it. And those five keys represented the five stages to making bourbon, which is grains, yeast, fermentation, distillation, and aging.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and what's kind of cool, so we're talking about
yeast, fermentation, distillation, and aging?
Correct.
Okay.
So those are five things that you need to make to make bourbon. So,
the five key S, I get it now. Yeah, all right.
So this key actually has the number two on it here. There are five of them numbered. We talked about this with
Blanton's.
With Blanton's about how you want to collect them all. So you can actually collect, when you go to buy a bottle, you can look at the numbers, see if it's one that you need.
Now, do they make a display for this where you can like put the key into the locks?
That would be cool. I don't know if there is, but That's where the name comes from. That's why the key has some significance to it. This bottle, for me, for us here in Ohio, it's not super hard to find. It's going to range in that $50 to $60 range. It's not crazy. You can definitely get cheaper, but it's kind of right in that, for me, kind of a sweet spot of where I like to buy a bottle. One of the other things that makes this a unique bourbon is what they call the Solera aging system. And basically what that is, I thought this was kind of neat when I found out about this. When they are aging in the barrels, right, they don't 100% drain the barrel. They leave some in there. We don't know how much that is. They don't really tell
some
you.
Some amount.
But they leave some amount in there. Then when they fill them again, they're filling new with the old and then aging that again. So, if you do all the sciencey, nerdy math fact stuff, you can eventually figure out that bourbon from 100 years ago, there might be like one molecule left in there or something.
Yeah.
Because they do have to use new barrels every time.
Right.
But I thought that was kind of cool.
That's
that they're like, in this bottle, there is technically bourbon from from older batches.
That's like a mother yeast kind of thing. They would do it like bread making. They have like, they leave some in there.
So
I was at first disappointed when you told me it wasn't about, knives and bows.
Yeah.
But I think the key is actually a pretty interesting story.
Yeah. And actually you can see on the bottle here, I'll show you guys a close up. They go through and they kind of explain.
Oh, they have the stages.
Yeah. They explain each of the stages. There's three.
Four.
There's four and five.
That's very interesting.
If you get a bottle and you want to read more, again, you can go to the website. You can buy a bottle and look it on there.
Sweet.
So let's crack this.
Oh, the key comes with it.
Crack this puppy open.
That is cool. Right there, that's good.
All right, so what they say is the smelling the scent notes.
Aroma.
Yeah. The aroma, yeah, that's a word. Apricot, pear, and grains. Let's see. Yeah, I smell fruitiness.
Hold on.
It's definitely. Yeah, I definitely. It's very sweet, actually.
It's a sweet smell. Yeah.
All right, taste is oak and spices, they say. So.
The oak is strong. That's a strong oakiness to it.
I get the spices on the back end, too.
Yeah, a little burn. I think it's like this. I feel like we're drinking a tree right now. Like, it's oaky.
I don't know if I get that much. I don't know if I feel like I'm licking a tree.
But, straight up not on bark.
Right, I've not licked many trees. I don't know what you do in your free time.
Chewing a tree is not a bad thing.
I know there's tree huggers.
Once in a while.
Are there tree lickers, too?
I like to drink tree sap in the morning. And then gnaw on some tree bark.
The tree lookers
in the
really look down on the tree huggers.
Yeah, they're
like, where's your commitment here?
There's a confliction of interest going on here.
If you're gonna be committed to saving the trees.
Some people are hugging them, other people are just chewing on their barks. Who'd have thought?
So that
actually this is it's very good.
It's very good.
I quite like this.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, I'd drink this again.
Well, to my office, so. We will drink
it. 91 proof.
I think that's pretty much most of the information I had for you on Blade and Bow.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, so we'll sip on this as we talk about everyday carrying a fixed blade versus a folder. Now, we realize there's an obvious answer here, which is like carry both. We're going to ignore the obvious.
We don't want obvious answers.
And we're going to debate the extremes here.
People think we are.
Because extremes are what the internet loves, and we can't have anything but far left and far right on anything.
No, modesty, not cool.
No.
You can't be in the middle.
No.
Middle is for losers.
If you do not pick one of these sides, you are a moron.
Yeah, and to the other side, you'll be, ostracized, and to the side that you agree with, you'll be lifted.
Yeah,
elevated.
So I'm going to be arguing on the side of that you should absolutely be carrying a fixed blade in your EDC.
And I think it's stupid. So I'm going to argue on the side that you shouldn't.
Okay.
So there we go.
So I think you started the last one. So I'm going to start here and get my points. So
really good.
I'm gonna give you some points for general EDC of a fixed blade and also why I think you should have one for defensive uses. So just in general, a fixed blade is a very simple thing. There's one piece of metal sharpened with some scales attached to it, or maybe it's wrapped with paracord or something. It's a very simple thing. There's nothing mechanical to have to maintain on it, to keep oiled, to make sure the screws are tight. There's nothing to it. You're right? So that's a big plus. With that comes durability. There's nothing. It's gonna be very hard to break.
Yeah.
A blade, especially
one that hunky.
This one, yeah.
Man.
Now, I realize, I also realize there's some location, where do you live? And there's some things there with legality. Make sure that you check your local laws, make sure that it's legal to conceal. But also, some of you guys may live out in the country and you use it elsewhere. You actually have a daily use for it. It may be a little bit more tricky for if you're a city slicker.
Yeah.
Then,
and New Yorkers,
they realize there might be less of a
may not want to carry
use for it. And I got a feeling you might get more into kind of situational type stuff. So I'm not going to get into that. But just in a fixed blade itself, you are not going to go wrong in having one with you because it is so simple and durable, and it's going to be handy to use over a folder. All right, so let's talk about defensive use now. I'm going to be honest, I wasn't a fixed blade guy for a long time. It didn't seem like something that I needed to carry until we took a ECQC class Craig Douglas and ShivWorks.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, in these classes, you are taught some skill sets and then you're put into a scenario. Into a revolution is what he calls it. And in those revolutions, you're going hand to hand with somebody. So at this point, you didn't have a chance to get a firearm out or anything. You thought the situation was going to be civil, and suddenly the person's on top of you,
right?
And there's a struggle. So we learned very quickly how quickly a gun can go down.
Yeah, everything fails.
And everything
massively
fails.
Fast.
Mags are flying out of guns.
Yep.
There's rounds popping out all over the place.
Everybody's got a hand on the gun.
Guns are getting jammed. You might get one shot because there's a hand on it. Especially if the bad guy gets a hold of that gun. Now you're struggling to get it back from him.
Yeah.
So
you're tired and exhausted.
I think we did five revolutions.
Mm-hmm.
I think in one of them I was actually able to use my gun.
Yeah.
In all of the rest of them, my clinch pick.
I think it's sweet.
Saved my life in all those scenarios. Now this is a clinch pick. This top edge right here is actually sharpened.
It's unbelievably
and it
sharp
is,
too.
This thing is terrifying.
Yeah.
I'm scared of this.
It is.
Woo. But the nice thing is when you buy one of these, you get a trainer as well. So for obvious reasons, we use the trainer during the class. But my clinch pick saved my life every single time after my gun went down. I think one time I might have actually gone straight for the knife instead of the gun.
Yeah, sometimes it's just in a more convenient location, so I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Sure.
There's less likely the bad guy's going to find this over a gun in a struggle.
Yeah.
So with that, this is not going to fail you in a fight. It's not going to get jammed. It's not going to go down. It's extremely hard to take this out of my hand because what are you going to grab? You're going to grab a sharpened
edge. Double
eight.
That's it.
In order to try to get this out of my hand. So it is a very useful thing in a defensive situation because it will not fail you. Something else to think about is if I'm in a close situation, I'm in a struggle and I get a gun out, you better hope that when you pull the trigger, the round's going to go somewhere that you want it to go.
Because
you're not looking.
You got somebody's hand wrapped around your head.
There's a struggle. And,
that's true.
And there are some techniques that we were taught, like, in just keeping the gun glued here because you'll know.
Right up here in your armpit.
You'll know where you're shooting. But when you're using a knife, there's no worry about where our bullet's going. Am I going to hit a bystander? Something else is that when you're using a folder, if you are in a defensive situation, you have to get that thing open.
Dustin, how
many times in our fighting situations were you going to have two hands to get a knife open?
I mean, not very often.
Like, hey, hold on one second. I need to get this out.
Two hands, certainly not. One hand,
and,
probably.
And even a knife that is assisted,
sure.
There's a pretty good chance it's not going to
get open, caught in pockets, whatever.
It's not going to get opened.
It happened several times.
It's not going to get open with the assisted
because
you're in a struggle. And I just want to be clear, like, if you're using a knife, good chance you're in a struggle.
It's already a bad time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with having to open a knife is also the possibility that the knife couldn't get closed on your hand during a struggle, whereas a fixed blade, it's impossible for the blade to get closed on your hand. So those are my points. What are your points for why you shouldn't carry weapons?
The pros to carrying a fixed blade in a combat situation. And I totally agree that oftentimes this is much more easy to use than, say, this. So I'm going to give you those points. I think they're very valid points. To counter those points, one of the big things that I have to say here is legality, right? So in New York, you may not be able to carry a 4.5-inch fixed blade, but you might be able to carry a 3.75 folder. Whatever.
New York, you can't carry anything.
That's true. That's also true, yes.
Yeah.
So legality,
right,
whether or not you care about that, you don't want to have to put an officer in a position where he has to make a judgment call on whether or not what you're carrying is a weapon or a tool. So having a folder tends to just, this looks more like a tool than say that does. That looks more like a weapon.
So the reason you bring that up, here in Ohio, and this is actually kind of a new law.
It's a very interesting one.
We have a new law just passed last year, I believe, that you can conceal a fixed blade or a folder as long as it's not a weapon.
Yes.
So
you figure that one out.
Yeah. Anything can be a weapon.
That's right.
So nothing's a weapon until it's used as a weapon is kind of how I...
It's all intent, right?
That's how I see that.
Doesn't a weapon determine intent?
Like, now, explaining to a cop that I'm opening boxes with a clinch pick...
I like the upper blade because it helps me get underneath the tape.
I like to get under the tape and open a box.
Really show that box who's boss.
So, I think I can make an argument with a cop that, this... displayed is just an everyday, but displayed might be a little bit harder.
Once again, though, you're able to leave that up to a judgment call to a police officer, and the less you can do that, the better, I think. So also, I think I like to play on, like, not possibilities, but probabilities, perhaps. I think the likelihood of you getting into a gunfight is very small, and the likelihood of you getting into a gunfight, you know, wrapped up in someone is also very small. So I tend to value comfort, and I have to balance that comfort to security, right? And so I think having a fixed blade offers you a bit of the security, I think having a folder offers you a bit of the security a fixed blade does, with significant improvements on comfort. You know, the size of this thing is smaller, fits in your pocket just fine. You don't have to worry about stuff under waistband, as you probably already carry a gun under waistband. And there's not a lot of places for a fixed blade to go other than on your waistband. Sometimes you can put it in your pocket, that kind of stuff. So I think comfort's nice. And then, you know, it's just one more thing that you have to grab when you load out. Like, you already have gun, mag, wallet, keys, phone, knife, flashlight, second knife? I just don't... I don't subscribe to that.
And
that
one is none, Dusty.
Yeah, well, sometimes
two
it's okay
one.
To
so
go without.
Really, our argument should be... why you should be carrying three knives.
Why should you carry...
Start this over.
Fixed
start
blade,
this over.
Boulder, samurai sword.
Why you should EDC three blades?
Yes, I agree. So also, you know, we had this conversation a little bit earlier, too, about social acceptance. It's socially acceptable to open a knife. And it's even more socially acceptable to open a knife with two hands, like this. And we don't really know exactly why that is, but it's very much so less aggressive than like...
If I whip open like a Microtech, or, I mean, even a Kershaw has like has an automatic open feature to it, that is more threatening, more shocking, aggressive to somebody than that. And
then Grandpa opening a knife to open a fiber box. Or
and then the only thing more, and I will give you this point, it is then even less socially acceptable for me to whip out a fixed blade out of a sheath.
Exactly.
Like, even if it's, this isn't necessarily a small knife, it's not a big knife.
I wouldn't call it a big knife.
There are much smaller fixed blades. Even if the blade was half this, and I whip it out of a sheath, it's going to get more, it's definitely going to get more of a reaction. I mean, you know, my kids all the time are like, oh, I got a string on my shirt, can you cut it off, because they know I always have a knife.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take this out and cut the string off my kid's shirt, but I will take a folder out.
Absolutely.
So I'll give you that point.
So along the concept of getting all your EDC together, I feel like sometimes people use the fixed blade as like the replacement gun, and it's not a replacement for a gun because it's really only effective at this range, right? And from all the classes we've learned, space is your friend when it comes to a gunfight and when it comes to general fights and whatever. So having that extra ability to reach out and touch somebody is nice. And I think that since you have so much in your waistband, having that knife there also kind
of... So here's something else on my side of things that I just thought about is if you're at a bar and you're drinking...
Yeah.
I don't know many states where you can drink and carry a gun at the same time.
Right.
Bring it, like...
No.
You can bring a knife.
If you use that while you're intoxicated?
No, I'm not, but... It is legal to carry
it. It is perfectly fine to take it
into a
bar.
It is okay to have this,
in most states,
to have a knife with you, because it's not a weapon, it's a tool.
It's a tool, yeah. I think it's reasonable.
So, you will not get in trouble for having it on you while you're drinking. You know, whether you use it or not, I'm not really talking about that, but I also think in some situations, you know, for me, maybe carrying a fixed blade is a situational thing. We talked about if you have a lifestyle where you're somewhere where having a fixed blade it just makes more sense. You're outdoors a lot, or whatever. But I could also see how carrying a defensive knife on you, if you are somebody who lives in much more congested areas, if you go to bars, if you go to restaurants, if you go places where you're a lot more close in, there's a really good chance your defensive encounter is going to be very close.
Yeah, they're going to be in your face.
Yeah.
They're probably drunk.
Right. Or just in general, even if they're not drunk, just if you're in very populated areas, I think carrying a defensive knife is something that you should absolutely have on you, because, like I talked about, you know, I don't have to worry about bullets flying and hitting
knives
people.
Knives don't usually over-penetrate, yeah.
Right, unless you've really got a good thrust.
I mean. If your forearm's inside of them and not the knife, you've got a problem.
You've gone through.
Samurai sword.
But to me, that's a big bonus in having a knife. Or let's talk about cars. If you are,
yeah, vehicles are nice.
For somebody, if you're an Uber driver,
yeah,
and you're not allowed to carry guns, I'm assuming they're communists and not going to let you carry knives either. But knives are more, again, this is a tool until it's not. So, but in a car situation, we've also did that
sure.
with Craig.
Yeah.
It was very difficult to wield a gun, especially both of us. I'm trying to stop you from using yours, me get mine out. Having a knife, I could have taken care of things. Do you have any more points on?
So my really the last point here is just generally it kind of corresponds with my legality thing, but also just your emotions. Like stabbing someone to death, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of other people's opinion, is a much more gruesome way of having to defend your life than say shooting them from a distance or.
Right? There's a much more.
You're not going to go to a court and be like, I stabbed him 13 times in self-defense. Because you're probably going to stab him a lot. Like,
yeah, unless you're very skilled.
Yeah.
You've taken extensive training. You're very skilled with a knife.
Yeah.
Chances are you're just going to be poking at him.
Poking.
And you aren't going to.
Some space. Right?
You aren't going to know, under here, know where those arteries are to go for. You're probably just going to be hacking at them.
Right. And they still have time, even after you pierce an artery. So. I think it's how gruesome, and not just for you, but also for the courts. So I think that's my last reason. I don't think I would carry
a
fixed blade. I would rather just use a handgun if I can.
I've not done a lot of mental preparedness.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like over the years I've spent time preparing a defense if I have to use a firearm.
Yeah,
in that situation, not done a whole lot of time trying to figure out how I can explain why I stabbed somebody 20 times, and why they're disemboweled, and it could be knives are. I'll be honest, I'm much more afraid of getting into a knife fight than a gunfight.
Well, yeah, because
knives terrify me.
I mean, people pointing guns would be terrifying too.
Oh, yeah, I don't want that.
It's way more scary. Yeah. Like,
because again, there's nothing that I can do. I'm not
Yeah.
Extremely skilled in knife defense.
No, you're going to get cut.
I'm going, yeah.
About to
it's
get.
It's going to be bad.
Stabbed too, probably. Yeah. It's just a struggle. But we probably should ask them what they think, because.
Yeah, which one of us are right, which one of us are wrong?
I'm right.
We ignoring the obvious truth in the middle,
which is that I'm right.
Carry both. But guys, let me know below why I'm right and why everybody should carry a defensive knife.
And also, don't forget to like this video. It really helps us out a lot.
Yeah, like,
and
subscribe, hit the bell.
We know who you are when you like this video. Subscribe to our channel, because we like to see what you say in the comments.
Yeah, let us know in the comments below. Let us know what you would like us to cover and debate.
We'll try and go through and comment on your comments as well.
We need to pick something where we actually get heated. Like, you know, where we...
Where we're pissed off at each other?
We're pissed off at each other. I think people...
If I don't go home after this...
Want some real drama.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about next week's
subject here.
Next one is going, I think we should do weapon light versus handheld light. I know every time I post on social media shooting with a handheld light, I get lambasted by...
Yeah, people like to correct you on that.
But people are like, why don't you use a weapon light? Blah, blah, blah. And
I have you know, I think... Handheld lights are way better than weapon lights.
No. It is obvious reason to have a weapon light.
Yeah, but like, handheld lights are so much nicer. And
I
have plenty of thoughts on that.
I'm sure you do. So let's get into that next week. All right, come back next week. We're going to talk about weapon light versus handheld light. If you want to let us know down below why you should have one or the other, then do that. Or just wait till next week and see how we battle that one out. But... All right, bud.
Cheers, man.
Conversation. We'll see you guys next time.
So you talk about Uber drivers, right? Mm-hmm. You're saying how like you communists won't let you carry knives or whatever. I would want taser seats. Do they make
the
taser seat covers?
You just like flip up a little thing.
Maybe it's on your steering wheel.
And then like push a button or you flip a...
Yeah, and then you just electrify the person in your back seat.
Why doesn't that exist? If it does, maybe it does, but...
And like massage seats, just short those out and turn
it's like
them
the Bond ejection seat, but instead it just fries them.
Just cripples your passengers.
It'd be like in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation when the cat gets electrified underneath the chair and there's just like a burn.
That's your rude Uber that you just picked up. Yep.
And with that, like you can even give him a little warning. You could like just give him a little.
Bzz. What if it has a tone like a dog collar?
What was that?
It goes toot.
Eventually, you get them trained where they just hear a beep. They pee their
they
pants.
They just get out of the car. Going down the road at 50 miles an hour. Oh, dude.
That's hilarious.
That's a brilliant idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I want that.
I feel like that's the solution to getting bad people out of your car.
Problem is that'll get abused and parents will start using it on their kids.
Oh, that would be so
Susie, funny. Stop touching Billy.
You touch Billy one more time, I'm gonna zap the both of you. No!
Boop.
We're evil.
I can't
people.
Say that I would use that because it's going on YouTube and that would.
Yes. Allegedly.
I would never do that.
Allegedly, this would be cool.
Yeah.
But not really.
It's not a good idea. Don't do that.
All right. Yeah.
Yep. Bad idea. Dumb idea, Dusty. Why would you say that?
But we're going to make one afterwards, right? We could probably sell this. I guarantee we could sell this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, you could.
I'm going to add that to our new product ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.